1 o'clock having arrived, I'm going to call the February 23rd, 2022 meeting of the Taxes Committee to order. Welcome, members, and again to those viewing and so forth. If you want to find any of the materials that we will be discussing today, please go to the Minnesota House of Representatives website, then go to Committees and Divisions, and then to Taxes Committee. And on that homepage, if you look down to the lower right, you will find all of the materials for this meeting. And we're also operating under Rules 10.01 under remote hearings. So with that, Ms. Griska, would you please call the roll?
Representative Marquardt.
Marquardt present.
Representative Marquardt present. Representative Lislegard.
Lislegard present.
Representative Lislegard present. Representative Davids.
Davids present.
Representative Davids present. Representative Agbaje.
Present.
Representative Agbaje present. Representative Carlson.
Carlson present.
Representative Carlson present. Representative Detmer.
Detmer present.
Representative Detmer present. Representative Garofalo.
Garofalo present.
Representative Garofalo present. Representative Gomez.
Gomez present.
Representative Gomez present. Representative Herr.
Present.
Representative Herr present. Representative Hertas.
Hertas present.
Representative Hertas present. Representative Howard.
Howard present.
Representative Howard present. Representative McDonald.
McDonald present.
Representative McDonald present. Representative Miller.
Miller present.
Representative Miller present. Representative Moran. Representative Mortensen.
Mortensen present.
Representative Mortensen present. Representative Robbins.
Present.
Representative Robbins present. Representative Sandell.
Present.
Representative Sandell present. Representative Schultz.
Present.
Representative Schultz present. Representative Stevenson.
Present.
Representative Stevenson present. Representative Swazinski. Representative Joachim.
Joachim present.
Representative Joachim present. We have a quorum.
Thank you very much, Ms. Griska. With that, we'll move to approval of the February 22nd, 2022 minutes. Representative McDonald, would you like to move those minutes?
Yes, I've read the minutes and I'd like to move them.
All right, Representative McDonald moves approval of the February 22nd, 2022 minutes. Any thoughts, comments, changes? Hearing none, I would ask you to please temporarily unmute yourselves as I call for the vote. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Those opposed, say nay. The motion does prevail. The February 22nd, 2022 minutes are approved. And also Representative Swazinski is in attendance. So before we go to the bill, you know, a lot of times, when we talk about state government or local or local government, we talk about things that have gone wrong. But I have to share a story. So we've had across the state 2 days of blizzards, at least in my neck of the woods, and anywhere from 5 to 15 inches of snow. And so I wanted to get down here in time for this meeting. And so I was traveling from Dilworth, so I thought, well, I'm going to have to leave. You know, normally it's about a four-hour drive. I said, I'm going to have to probably leave 5 or 6 hours. So I left at 7 o'clock this morning. And I went on city streets. I went on county streets and then I-94. And I will tell you, the roads were excellent. Excellent. And I actually made it here in less than 4 hours. So just a huge thank you to our MnDOT state snowplower people, our county snowplowers, our city snowplowers who, you know, get us from A to B in a safe and efficient way. And this winter has been just awful. And like I said, I left at 7 o'clock today and this was all done. So I know they were snowplow workers working late at night, early this morning. So thank you to all of those out on those roads, plowing that snow and making things safe. So I won't tell you what speed I was able to go today, but all I can say is I made it here in less than 4 hours. So things were good. So with that, members, we're going to move to our only bill of the day, and that is House File 3669, the governor's tax bill. So I will move House File 3669 to be laid over for possible inclusion into the House Omnibus Tax Bill. And I have to say I'm honored to be carrying Governor Walz's tax bill today. And you know, we have probably about an $8.8 billion surplus, if you count the 7.7 from the November forecast and the $1.15 billion from the ARPA funds. And so that's about $8.8 billion. And so we've got some folks say, you know, give it all back in tax cuts. And we've got some folks saying, give it all back in needed investments. And what I like about the governor's budget, he takes a both and approach. He takes a balanced approach to doing both tax cuts and investing in very needed areas around the state. And so, you know, for example, if you take the unemployment insurance trust fund replenishment, which Governor Walz proposes in this budget, and the $1 billion for the frontline workers and the $700 million for the rebate, that's $4.4 billion going straight back into taxpayers' pocketbooks. That's half of the surplus going straight into right back to people's pocketbooks. And if you take the one-time funding, which is probably about 4.8, 4.9, that $4.4 billion is about 90% of the one-time funding going back to taxpayers. And the other half of the budget is going for needed investments. And so, you know, when I talk to a lot of folks, they say, you know, I want a bipartisan balanced approach. And House File 3669, the governor's tax bill, goes a long way in this balanced bipartisan, I'm hoping, approach. So that's why this tax bill that Governor Walz is putting before us is a big part of the balanced approach he's taking to provide tax cuts for those who really need those tax cuts and making those important investments in education, healthcare, and public safety. And so with that, honored to have Commissioner Doty from the Department of Revenue. And I also want to thank you for what you do and your department and staff for our state. And with that, Commissioner Doty, I think what we will do, if it's all right with you, and members, is I would like to take this article by article. So if you would be okay, after each article, members, if you have questions, you could do that. We won't have public testimony today. That will be tomorrow, but certainly members' questions as we go through here. So with that, Commissioner Doty, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Marquardt and members of the committee. Thank you again for having us here today. For the record, my name is Robert Doty, and I am the commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. And with me today is our legislative director, Joanna Bayers. As you know, last month, Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan presented their supplemental budget. Today, we will give a brief overview of the priorities and investments made in the governor's proposal and provide more detail about the provisions included in the tax bill. Next slide, please. Given the responsible stewardship of Minnesota's budget, we have a remarkable opportunity to support the middle class, working families, and small businesses while also investing in public safety, healthcare, and education. Governor Walz understands that we can reduce costs and grow our economy while protecting the health and safety of Minnesotans and ensuring that every child receives a high-quality education no matter their race or zip code. In the governor's supplemental budget recommendations, the administration is prioritizing three areas. Number one, expanding economic opportunities for all Minnesotans. Number two, supporting children and families. And number three, protecting Minnesotans' health, safety, and well-being. The governor is also recommending investing in local jobs and projects through a proposed $2.7 billion in bonding projects. Next slide, please. So Governor Walz has put people at the center of his budget, investing in students, workers, communities, and small businesses that propel our economy forward. The administration is also committed to making our state the best place to call home. That's why this proposal will invest in schools, affordable childcare, and paid family leave. And of course, the governor knows that to achieve this, we must continue to protect Minnesota's health, safety, and well-being. This proposal will expand access to affordable health care, reduce violent crime, combat climate change, and ensure that all Minnesotans have a safe place to call home. The Walz-Flanagan administration understands that by supporting small businesses and expanding economic opportunity, ensuring children have an educational experience that values who they are and helps them reach their highest potential, and protecting Minnesotans' health and safety, this truly is a transformative opportunity to move Minnesota forward. And now I would like to have our Legislative Director Joanna Bayers. She will begin by reviewing Article 1, our federal update.
Ms. Bayers, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Marquardt, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Joanna Bayers. I am the Legislative Director at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. The Walz-Flanagan budget proposes conforming with many of the tax changes made by the federal government over the past 3 years. At least six federal bills with tax changes have been enacted since our last general update for state tax laws. Adopting the federal changes for businesses and individuals provides an investment in Minnesota's tax system to ensure that it's stable, predictable, and less complex. Much of the state tax code is based on federal calculation of income, so conforming with these federal tax changes will allow the benefit to flow through to state taxes. The federal changes we recommend conforming with include extension of provisions for depreciating equipment, income exclusions for certain federal relief loans, natural disaster relief provisions, and an exclusion of discharge of indebtedness on principal residences, plus many more changes. As I previously noted, there have been six federal bills containing tax changes enacted since the last time Minnesota updated its tax statutes. The 2021 tax bill conformed to a few provisions. The state tax code is not general conformity with the federal tax code. By tax year 2022, our state tax code will be 4 years out of conformity, which is the longest the state has been out of conformity in decades. As a result of this challenging situation for taxpayers and tax preparers, we considered alternative approaches to conformity to relieve the administrative burden on taxpayers, tax preparers, and the agency. This proposal includes an approach aimed at both getting our state tax code in alignment with the Internal Revenue Code and to simplify filing for individuals and businesses. We propose a one-time catch-up adjustment that will happen on the 2022 return. Taxpayers with a retroactive change in taxable income would be required to make a special adjustment on their 2022 income tax or corporate franchise tax return. Retroactive conformity, which is the traditional approach, typically means amended or adjusted returns. Because the federal changes stretch back multiple years, some taxpayers would have to file multiple amended returns. Using a one-time prospective adjustment on the tax return that accounts for prior tax years provides tax benefits without the additional burden and confusion and costs of amended or adjusted returns. And as I mentioned, this is just one approach for consideration. We understand there is no perfect solution, but we want to start that conversation. We've started engaging with several stakeholders on this administrative approach and have asked for their feedback. We are committed to continuing this conversation on this approach as we move through session. So that concludes Article 1.
So members, Article 1 is the federal conformity aspect. And like I said yesterday, when we were talking about the Shuttered Venue Operators Grant, a number of these things were in the House bill that left the floor and also in the governor's supplemental budget. So any questions, members? And I need to show the whole grid here. I don't see any questions. If you want a question, just you may have to just speak out, but I don't see any at this time. Okay. Very good. Thank you. Move on to Article 2.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
If I could, I was having some technical difficulties. It's probably not the machine's fault. But I do have a question. It looks like business relief programs like SBA loans are only conformed to for year 21. Is that correct, or is there an oversight, or is it actually 20 and 21? That's my first question. I've got one other question here. So on the SBA loans and the loan programs, they're getting conformity for 1 year, which I like, but I'm just wondering why we wouldn't do a fiscal year 20 also. Like I said, that may just be an oversight. Or
so, Chair Davids, what document are you looking? There's a number of documents, and there's House Fiscal Analysis, which I'm looking at, February 22nd, 9/26. There's
Mr. Chairman, it's for House Fiscal.
Okay.
And maybe then Ms. Templin could step in, or
Ms. Templin, would you want to?
Yes, Mr. Chair, there were provisions enacted in the 2021 bill related to business relief for tax year 20, and I will give you those provisions.
So I think we're looking at page 2 of the House Fiscal Analysis, and it has where it says a column where it says effective, and it's talking about tax years that it does apply to.
Correct. The governor's bill does conform to tax year 21 to the business relief provisions that are contained in ARPA, in the American Relief, or the American Rescue Plan, in the Consolidated Appropriations Act. The governor conforms to the SBA loans for tax year 21, and the exclusion of shuttered venue grants in tax year 21, and there are revenue impacts for tax year, for individual income tax and for corporate tax.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Templin, the question is, Chair, what happened to 2020? Am I just missing something?
Ms. Templin or Ms. Bears? Ms. Templin, me.
Mr. Chair and Representative Davids, the provisions for tax year 20 were conformed to in the 2021 tax bill that was enacted last year.
Okay, thank you for clarifying that.
Very good, thank you. Yeah, just as kind of a remember, last year, the House had 20 and 21 in there, a lot of for 21, but we were only able to get just the conformity for tax year 20 was the only one we were able to get to the finish line.
Okay, so. And that makes sense. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My other question is, if we could clarify catch-up provisions for filing taxes, what is the impact for taxpayers that have refunds due from nonconformity?
Very good. Ms. Bears.
Mr. Chair, Representative Davids, that is a really good question. And we have heard that when we've met with stakeholders, and we continue to hear that. And so what we propose is just an alternative approach. So we do know that this catch-up approach is not going to work for everybody, but it was just one approach. And so we know that some folks will be due a refund that would have to wait till 2022. And some, would get their refund faster because of this approach. And so we're open to having that conversation. We are 6 federal bills behind. And so I think our goal was just to see what we could do to simplify this for taxpayers and tax preparers. And again, we're open to that conversation as we move through session, because we do know some folks, you know, would have to wait for a refund.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Ms. Bears. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good questions. All right, Ms. Bears, Article 2.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm actually going to turn it over to Commissioner Doty at this time.
Commissioner Doty.
Thank you, Chair. We're going to kind of tag team here, going a little bit back and forth between the articles. So for Article 2, the governor's budget to move Minnesota forward also includes innovative solutions to lower costs for consumers and invest in the lifeblood of Minnesota's communities, its small businesses. The following items are included in Article 2 of our bill. First, the investing in the angel tax credit. The governor recommends allocating an additional $7 million for the angel tax credit in fiscal year 23 and $10 million in fiscal year 24-25. The program is Minnesota's primary economic development tool to assist early stage businesses engaged in technological innovation by providing a tax credit to investors or investment funds that make an equity investment. The Angel Tax Credit Program has resulted in over $498 million in private investment in Minnesota startups, leveraged by the state's issuance of $120 million in tax credits to angel investors. This proposal also extends the program's sunset to the end of tax year 2030. Investing in this program prioritizes economic growth and builds on Minnesota's existing ecosystem of high-tech, high-innovation companies, including the state's clean energy technology and biotech, bioscience businesses. The Angel Tax Credit will help communities across the state create wealth by incentivizing investment in companies with founders that are women, veterans, minorities, and those headquartered in Greater Minnesota. Governor Walz is working to make Minnesota the best state in the country to raise a family. The governor's proposal includes important changes to refundable income tax credits that Minnesota families rely on, namely Minnesota's Child and Dependent Care Credit and the K-12 Education Credit. First, the Child and Dependent Care Credit. This proposal recognizes the challenges Minnesota parents face in paying for quality, affordable childcare by increasing the income threshold and maximum credit amount for Minnesota's refundable child and dependent care credit, which will lower taxes for more Minnesotans. Minnesota's child and dependent care credit is based on the federal credit. A percentage of unreimbursed employment-related child or dependent care expenses can be claimed. Households claim costs for before and after school programs, daycare expenses, as well as preschool. The credit rate depends on income and ranges from 35% of expenses for families with incomes of $15,000 or less, up to 20% of expenses for families with incomes over $43,000. Unlike the federal credit, Minnesota's credit is refundable. This proposal makes three changes to the credit. First, the income threshold at which the maximum state credit begins to phase out would increase from $55,300 up to $70,000. This would make almost an additional 21,000 more Minnesota households eligible for the credit, with an average reduction in tax of about $271. Secondly, the proposal would temporarily increase the Minnesota credit to be equal to 130% of the federal credit, not to exceed actual expenses for tax years 2022 and 2023. This would impact about 51,000 tax returns in tax year 2022, and the average reduction in tax would be about $161. Third, under current law, a credit is allowed for a child born in the tax year, even if there are no qualifying expenses. This credit is only available to married taxpayers filing a joint return. About 3,900 returns are expected to receive about $2.1 million in newborn credits this year, with an average credit of about $530. The governor's proposal would update the credit to be available for taxpayers regardless of marital status. Under this proposal, about 2,600 more taxpayers will be eligible for the credit, increasing the total amount of credits by an additional $1.4 million. The increased amount of child and dependent care credit is effective for tax years 2022 and 2023 only under this proposal. The increased phase-out threshold and expanded credit for a child born in the tax year would be permanent beginning in 2022. The Working Family Credit Expansion for I-10s. The state's Working Family Credit provides households with a refundable tax credit to help with the many financial constraints they face. This program, which is Minnesota's version of the Federal Earned Income Credit, is an important source of financial stability for low and moderate income working families with children. The governor's proposal would allow taxpayers with an individual taxpayer identification number, or I-10, to qualify for the Working Family Credit if they meet the income and other eligibility requirements for the credit. Under current law, a taxpayer generally must be eligible for the federal earned income credit in order to receive the state working family credit. The taxpayers filing an income tax return with an I-10 are not eligible for the federal credit and therefore cannot receive the working family credit. I-10s are numbers that are issued by the Internal Revenue Service to individuals who are not eligible for a Social Security number but are required to file taxes. They are used exclusively for the purpose of filing taxes. These workers pay Minnesota taxes, but do not receive the credit. By including these Minnesotans, we would reduce poverty and economic hardship for these families and their children and contribute to a more equitable tax system. This update would include individuals who use an individual taxpayer identification number, or I-10, to file a tax return starting in tax year 2022. Approximately 8,200 new households would then qualify for the working family credit with an average credit of about $1,300. Expanding the K-12 education credit. Under current law, a taxpayer is allowed a refundable income tax credit equal to about 75% of eligible education expenses for a qualifying child in kindergarten through 12th grade. The maximum credit is $1,000 for each child. Eligible expenses include fees for instruction outside the regular school day or school year, expenses for textbooks or instructional materials, and transportation costs paid to others. Under current law, the maximum credit is phased out beginning at household income of $33,500. The phase-out range is increased by $2,000 for each additional child. The income thresholds are not indexed for inflation. Under this proposal, the phase-out threshold is increased to $70,000 in tax year 2022. The threshold is adjusted for inflation beginning in tax year 2023. The phase-out rates and maximum credit amounts are unchanged. The proposal also changes the measure of income from household income to federal adjusted gross income. Household income includes income from all sources, both taxable as well as non-taxable, and is a broader measure of income. Changing to federal adjusted gross income simplifies the calculation of the credit for taxpayers and aligns it with other tax benefits that use federal adjusted gross income to measure eligibility. In tax year 2019, K-12 education credits totaled about $7.2 million on 28,000 returns. Under this proposal, an additional 38,000 returns are expected to qualify for the credit, and the average credit would be about $300. Mr. Chair, that concludes our review of Article 2.
Thank you, Commissioner Doty. We have a few questions. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Doty, with the 40-year high of inflation and the price of gasoline, everybody is feeling the pinch everywhere in Minnesota and all over the nation. In your presentation before you introduced the Angel Tax Credit, you made a comment saying lower cost to consumers. So I was wondering if you can it caught my ear, of course, knowing that the cost to consumers on everything has been going up. So what particularly did you mean when you said lower cost to consumers? I think I just got the end of that sentence. So what is being lowered, what is being lowered of the cost to consumers?
Commissioner Doty.
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, thank you for that question. I think basically what the reference there really is regarding the tax relief that is being offered in the governor's by several proposals in the governor's bill. And so I think the idea is that that tax relief would then, in a sense, taxpayers are then their costs are being lowered overall, or they're not having to pay as much on those costs. So I don't know if I would directly call that, if I should say that's directly lowering costs to consumers, or just the tax relief that is available, that's being made available to consumers through the proposal.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner Doty. So perhaps you may be misspoke, because the governor's bill here does not lower costs to consumers. Is that correct?
Commissioner Doty.
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, the governor's bill provides tax relief to consumers.
Representative McDonald.
Okay, thank you. So maybe it's just a play on words, but when you say lower cost to consumers, everybody's ear is going to perk up, because at $3.50 a gallon and $8 for milk, you know, I'm hoping that the governor can help lower cost to consumers, but I see what you're going to switch that wording there. So thank you for the clarification.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Doty. I was particularly happy to see the expansion of the K-12 education tax credit in the bill, but I was concerned to also notice that the credit does not include allowing families to use that expanded credit for tuition. And as you know, the deduction can be used for tuition. Could you address why the governor is not allowing low-income families to use the credit for tuition?
Commissioner Doty.
Chair Marquardt, Representative Robbins, thank you for the question. I think the way the proposal is set up, I mean, I listed out specifically the things that are included in that proposal. And I think that, you know, the idea of specifically addressing tuition is one that I think we're continuing to be open to further discussions about. But what I've listed is what's in the proposal at present right now.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for that, Mr. Doty. I actually have a bill that does almost exactly what the governor has proposed, but also includes tuition in the use of the credit. So I would encourage you to take a look at that, HF 153, and I would love to work with you on making sure that there's equity between what middle-income families can spend their deduction on and what low-income families can spend their credit on. So thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions on Article 2? I don't see any. All right. We will move to Article 3. And who is, Commissioner, are you taking Article 3, or is that
Joe? Try to take 3.
Good afternoon, Chair.
Ms. Bears.
Chair Marquardt, members of the committee. Article 3 is our sales tax article, and I'll cover this article and 4, 5, and 6, but I'll stop after each article. The Walz Flanagan administration understands the importance of supporting our local units of government across the state of Minnesota. Governor Walz proposes streamlining the sales and use tax exemption for building, construction, or reconstruction materials, supplies, and equipment for buildings and facilities used primarily by local governments and nonprofits. Current law allows a sales tax exemption for use if purchased directly by the local government or nonprofit. There's also an administrative rule that allows a contractor or subcontractor to acquire construction materials exempt for tax under specific conditions. This proposal streamlines the exemption to apply to materials purchased by a contractor. Contractors and subcontractors and builders would pay the tax at the time the materials are purchased, and the local governments and nonprofits would submit a tax refund claim to the Department of Revenue. This proposal is effective for sales and purchases made after July 1st, 2021. And that concludes our sales tax article.
Very good. Ms. Bears, I'm looking at the bill right now. And because I forget what meeting it was, but it came up to whether or not school districts were included. And I do see on line 31.11, it does say school districts. And so include school districts, local governments, hospitals and nursing homes owned and operated by political subdivisions, county law libraries, regional public library systems, nonprofit groups, hospitals, outpatient surgical centers, nursing homes and boarding care homes. And so it's pretty extensive. So thank you for that. Are there any questions on Article 3? This is the sales and use tax portion. Is this?
Mr. Chair, Rep. Hertaus.
Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is an area of my private activity that I'm quite familiar with regard to purchasing construction materials. I would ask the department, how are you going to monitor this? How are you going to audit this? How are you going to know that the contractor is picking up materials and claiming tax-exempt status at the retail level with the retailer or the vendor? How are you going to make sure that those materials, all of the materials, are going to that project?
Ms. Bears or Commissioner, which...
Chair Marquardt, Representative Hertaus, those are really good questions. And the way the process for the refund is set up is that the local governments would still pay the contractor, and that would include the sales tax amount. And then that local government would actually apply with the Department of Revenue to get that sales tax exemption. So it will be on a lot of local governments to ensure that when they're paying contractors, that the materials that they're using are going towards that project. It's similar to approach that we use with all of our other sales tax refunds.
Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, this is a great idea, but the problem is that when you submit a bid or are building a project, there's not a breakdown of the materials. It's usually a lump sum contract amount to provide a finished manufactured product on site. There's no way to audit this, and it's going to be just totally rash with abuse.
All right. And, you know, last year we did put in the state law for public safety facilities that this process would work this way. So Representative Swiecinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me?
I can.
You were breaking. I didn't know if it was me breaking up or you.
You're breaking up a little bit, but we can hear you.
Okay, thank you. And just a double check question. Does this section of the bill relate to road construction as well for the state of Minnesota and also the counties for road construction?
Ms. Bears.
Chair Marquardt, Representative, that's a really good question. So it's for building construction, reconstructions purchased by the contractor for buildings and facilities. So it's mostly specific for buildings and facilities used by that primary local government and in some nonprofits as well, but it's for buildings and facilities.
So Ms. Bears, are you saying that roads would not qualify? Is that what I understood you to say? That's a good question.
My understanding, infrastructure, yes. Infrastructure would apply, but.
Right.
Okay.
I just wanted to clarify that.
Very good. Yes. Thank you.
Okay.
And anyone else on Article 3? All right. We'll move to Article 4 of the bill.
The governor proposes allowing an individual taxpayer, or Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. The governor proposes allowing an individual taxpayer identification number to qualify for the homestead status. Homestead status conveys several benefits to homeowners, including lower tax rates and qualification for property tax refund. The intent of the homestead classification is to recognize that homeowners bring value and stability to cities, school districts, and counties. Current law requires taxpayers to have a social security number in order to obtain homestead status. The governor's proposal would provide greater parity between individuals with individual taxpayer identification numbers and social security numbers. Approximately 1,800 taxpayers will be eligible for homestead status under this proposal. Furthermore, the supplemental budget also includes an update to the senior property tax deferral program and an update to the agricultural product definition of hemp. The governor recommends increasing the income threshold for the senior citizen property tax deferral program from $60,000 to $75,000, beginning with property taxes payable in 2023. The income cap has not been increased since 1995. This cap has caused seniors to become ineligible for the program due to cost of living adjustments. It is estimated that the state will reimburse counties by $180,000 in FY24-25 for this program. Additionally, the supplemental budget would add hemp to the list of what is considered an agricultural product. Under this proposal, land used to produce hemp would qualify as a Class 2A homestead or non-homestead agricultural land. Minnesota's hemp production industry has changed over the last few years, but the property tax statutes have not been updated to reflect the changes. This proposal is needed to make sure classification of land used to produce hemp is correctly and uniformly done throughout the state. This proposal will increase the state paid property tax refunds by $70,000 in FY25. And that includes our Article 4.
Very good. Any questions on Article 4, property taxes? Okay, I don't see any. Let's move to Article 5. Ms. Bears.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Article 5 and 6 are aid programs. The governor also recommends establishing two new aid programs to create stable funding resources. So the first aid is the new public safety aid for cities, tribal governments, and counties with police or sheriff departments. The $100 million annual investment in communities will be distributed based on population. And that's our Article 5.
And the soil and water conservation aid?
In Article 6, Mr. Chair, the second aid is our program that establishes a reliable funding source for soil water conservation districts with a $22 million annual appropriation. This aid would replace the one-time funding the soil and water conservation districts receive from the Clean Water Fund. And these investments will support local projects, drive economic growth, assist in keeping Minnesota's healthy and safe, and protecting our state's beauty and natural resources. So that concludes our Article 5 and 6. I'm happy to take questions about these two aids.
Very good. So any questions on Articles 5 and 6? So that's primarily two aids, creation of a public safety aid and a soil water conservation aid.
Chair Marquardt, Rep. Hertaus.
Yes, Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my question would be regarding the public safety aid. There are a number of communities, some of which reside in the district that I represent, that have joint powers with regard to sharing police services as well as fire. Why would these cities not be eligible to save some of the costs with regard to providing police and sheriff protection in circumstances like that? I mean, this I understand the good intent of this, but this is encouraging cities to have their own police departments when maybe it's not necessary and is maybe more efficient to share some of these services. So is there any particular reason why joint powers are excluded from this situation?
Ms. Barris or Commissioner Doty?
Chair Marquardt, Representative Hertaus, those are really good points. What we did when we did this is we based it on, you know, whether the city had a sheriff's department or not, but we realized that not every city had its own police department or law enforcement agency. So what we did is then divided the, you know, took the remaining 30% of that aid and gave it to the sheriff's department to help them and cover those areas where those cities may not have a police department or use a joint powers for a police department.
Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I guess if some of that aid is going to the sheriff's departments, that would work where the local sheriff or county is providing services. But there are, and I'd like the Department of Revenue to understand that there are joint powers of individual police departments that are not sheriff's departments, that this aid going to cities would be helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hertaus. Any other questions or thoughts on Articles 5 and 6? Okay, we will go to the final article of the bill, Article 7. Commissioner Doty.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm going to finish up with Article 7, which is the miscellaneous article. And the item here is direct payments. Finally, Governor Walz also proposes distributing direct payments of up to $350 directly to Minnesotans. A married couple filing jointly or a head of household would receive a payment of $350. All other filers would receive a payment of $175. Taxpayers with income in the fourth tier would not be eligible to receive these payments. More than 2.7 million Minnesota households would receive a direct payment under this proposal. These payments would be sent to qualifying households who filed a 2020 Minnesota income tax return or property tax refund. And Mr. Chair, do you want me to wait or I'll close up?
Are there any questions, member, on Article 7, which is the rebate? Representative Howard.
Thank you, Commissioner. I do have a few questions about these refunds. First, can you tell me how much revenue, the revenue picture of how much it will cost for these refunds?
Commissioner Doty?
Where is my cost on that? I believe, Joanna Baer, would you be able to help me with that one? I'm trying to find my note on that.
Ms. Barrett.
Chair Marquardt, Representative Howard, it's about $703 million.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. Representative Howard.
Thank you, Chair. And do I have it correctly that how these would work is that no matter your income, you'd get the same amount. So if you made 40 grand a year, you'd get the same amount as if you made, 140 grand a year?
Commissioner Doty.
Mr. Chair, Representative Howard, thanks for that question. And the only stipulation would be that people whose income would be in the fourth tier would not be eligible, but everyone else would receive a flat rate depending on their filing status, quite frankly. So if you are a married joint filer, you would receive the $350. And head of household. And if you were a single filer or married filing separately, you'd receive the $175 amount.
Representative Howard.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and thanks, Commissioner. Can you remind me what that level is, that third tier, fourth tier breakdown? What's that upper limit of folks that would be getting this check?
Sure.
Commissioner Doty.
Mr. Chair, Representative Howard. Yeah. So for single filers, that fourth tier limit is $164,400. For married filing jointly, that's $273,470. For head of households, that would be $218,540. And then for married filing separately, that'd be $136,735.
Representative Howard.
Thanks, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. Was there any thought given to do these refunds in a more targeted or progressive manner? And I just asked, and maybe there's an implementation reasoning, but it is a large price tag, $703 million. And when we start to get to the upper range of that income, I question a little bit, what's our economic impact that we're having versus folks at more the bottom end of the spectrum that have been really our frontline workers or folks that have been really going through a lot. And so just if you would comment on just sort of the thinking behind kind of the flat amount versus something that feels more targeted or progressive.
Commissioner Doty.
Mr. Chair, Representative Howard, thanks. I appreciate that question a lot. I think there's a couple things there. One is that I think it's also important to distinguish this from the whole frontline worker proposal, which would really get at that part of that target group that you just mentioned. So I think that's something that I would consider. I also think though that, and you stated this about implementation, when we start trying to stagger this in some kind of way or target it differently, the implementation becomes really challenging. I mean, this would affect about 2.7 million taxpayers just in and of itself. And when you start trying to stagger that or target that in different ways, the implementation does change a lot. And I think it would be more challenging. But you raise a great point, and it's something that, you know, again, I think we should definitely consider and think about for sure.
Representative Howard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. And just one last, and I wouldn't expect this today, but if you do have any sort of analysis of this $703 million, you know, broken down by income decile or whatnot, that'd be information I think would be helpful to kind of understand as we're weighing our decisions on this. But I appreciate the responses to the questions. Thank you.
So thank you. And kind of just on this discussion, when you probably looked at the last rebates we had, which were 98, 99, then 2000 or 01, but the 98, 99 ones were based on your property taxes. It was either, I think it was 20% one year and 18% another. So the more you paid in property taxes, the more you got. And in 2001, it was based on, well, the problem with the property tax one then is you lost some of that then on your deduction from your federal. So they did away with doing the property taxes. You lost some of your deduction then on the federal because your property taxes were lower. And then 00001, they did it on sales tax. And there again, basically, the more you made, the more you got. And so by doing it the flat way, if you're at $350 for someone making $35,000, that'd be 1% of your income. If you're $70,000, it's only 0.5 of your income. So there is probably a progressive scale on this, because the less you make, the higher percent of the refund you're getting versus the higher you make being flat. So this probably, of the refunds that have been done, is probably the most progressive by quite a bit from what we've seen in the last 25 years. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Chairman, for either nonpartisan staff or for the commissioner, which tax are these rebates being based off of?
Commissioner Doty.
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, this is based on their 2020 state income tax return or their property tax refund.
Okay, so Mr. Chairman, to your point.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To your point, the commissioner or either nonpartisan staff, if taxpayers are given a credit back on that, if they're given a rebate back on that, then that will mean that they have taken a deduction in their previous year's taxes with a state or local property tax. They may have taken that deduction and now we're giving them the money back. Is this going to require filers to then refile their previous federal returns and pay some of that rebate to the federal government? Because that's why we went with the sales tax route, as the chairman mentioned back in 01. So my question is, how are we getting around forcing taxpayers to refile the returns and give some of the rebate back to the federal government?
Commissioner Doty.
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, that's an interesting question. And I guess that was absolutely never the intention here at all. So I would have to look closer at that to see, to make sure that we were able to address the issue that you're raising. So I think that's a good question.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner. And Mr. Chairman, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for providing me the glide path into that conversation. We didn't talk beforehand, but it was perfect. And certainly if staff is going to go around calling these things walls checks, then certainly the tax increases that Minnesotans will be paying, writing checks to the federal government, well, I guess that'd be a walls check too then, wouldn't it, Mr. Chairman? But if you look back at, as you mentioned, back when the rebates were done, this is precisely why it was based off of the sales tax rebate, so that there would be no interactions with federal taxes. Now, since then, we have the complicating factor of the federal government has a $10,000 cap on our state and local tax deduction. So some people this would have no impact on, but for those individuals who itemized and had less than $10,000 in state and local tax deductions, given that this is a rebate based off of previous income taxes paid, that would be, that would necessitate a refiling of federal taxes. And so hopefully the administration can get us some correcting language, or perhaps they can just shift it to a flat sales tax as was done in the past. So thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate the dialogue.
Yeah, thank you. I'm looking at, I don't know if it's related to your income tax. I'm thinking that that's how you qualify, is whether or not you filed your income tax or a refund, but I don't think it's part of that. I don't, Commissioner, and that's why I think it's separate and not, wouldn't be a reduction on your income tax liability. That's to me, is that's who qualifies. That's how you qualify for this.
Mr. Chair, thank you for that. I agree with that. And as I'm listening to Representative Garofalo and I'm thinking about that, that's really the qualification measurement there. We're not using that tax specifically. The other thing is that these payments would not be subject to state tax at all. So that would be the other piece of this as well. But beyond that, we can look at that closer specifically.
Yeah, Representative Garofalo, yeah, thank you for bringing that up. Anything further, Representative Garofalo?
No, Mr. Chairman. The only point I would make is that we're using this is going to be a rebate of taxes paid. And the answer given to the committee was that we were rebating income taxes paid. And so if that's not the case, if this is a rebate of sales taxes, then we just need to make sure that's clear so that we don't have the federal government clawing back what could potentially be putting money in the pockets of more Minnesotans. So I don't think anyone on this committee wants to see us using 10, 20, or 30% of the rebate money being used to cover increased federal tax liability. So thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you, Representative Garofalo. Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just kind of on the same track as Representative Howard. I'm wondering if, you know, I understand that introducing progressivity would also introduce some complication in the administration of the rebate. I'm wondering if you considered, giving people a rebate for their kids. That's like another kind of concern that I had, you know, when the federal stimulus checks came out, you got one for your kids too. We heard a lot last week about the increased costs that parents are paying, especially with like little ones who are in daycare and childcare. So just wondering, if that conversation happened and if there was a reason that we didn't go that way.
Commissioner Doty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Gomez, I appreciate that. And we've definitely been speaking, as I think you heard Joanna Bayers mentioned, we've been talking to a lot of stakeholder groups and really speaking a lot about different options, if you will, relative to how would you approach that, really, looking at like the child tax credit type of a thing or whatever we might want to look at doing there. And those discussions, we're still having those discussions. So I appreciate your point. And it's a very, very good one. And one that points that we're going to continue to be talking about.
Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Commissioner. I appreciate it. Just wanted to put that out there.
Thank you, Representative Gomez. Representative Sosinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just, I maybe could just pipe in. I know Representative Howard brought it up first, and now Representative Gomez did, and asking why the Jesse checks aren't more progressive. And I probably, the reason why is because the checks wouldn't get into the suburbs. And, you know, from a race standpoint, you know, trying to buy and play when people are concerned about inflation, people are concerned about public safety, The governor has to talk about something that's positive in the suburbs, and the checks, the Jesse checks or whatever we're calling them, is one way to do that. And I just, I think that's probably one of the reasons that the governor and the administration has moved that way.
Thank you. Mr. Doty, any response? Or?
Mr. Chair, no, I don't have a response to that specifically, no.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mostly just wanted to speak so that you knew that I was listening to the conversation. No, just kidding.
Representative Miller, I know, you're always listening.
Well, sure. My commentary is, though, is a lot of this very good, valid discussion from both sides on direct payments could be resolved if we just did a tax credit across the board on income. Then we can address all these needs. It's proportionate to the people that put in more, might receive some more benefits. The people that don't have much money can still receive a little bit, I suppose. I always find it amazing how government thinks that they can regurgitate out money and write checks, and somehow it's better than letting the taxpayers just do what they do best with their own money. So I don't know that it's really such a great idea to just be cutting checks like this. A lot of the other things proposed today are different, to kind of wriggle around and give a little bit here, a little bit there. I say we just give it back to the taxpayers. That's whose money it is, rather than we deciding what's best with how they can use it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Miller. Any other questions on Article 7 before we move to general questions on House File 3669? Okay. Members, any general comments or questions on House File 3669? Governor Walz's tax bill. I don't see any. So Commissioner Doty, would you like to close?
I would. And I'll get myself back in line here.
Oh, I'm sorry. We've got a question. Representative Herr. I'm sorry I missed you.
That's okay, Chair Marquardt. It was a late hand. I didn't know if I was going to actually say anything or not. I just wanted to say thank you to Commissioner Doty and team for bringing the bill forward. I know that we don't always agree. We're not all going to agree on everything that is in there, but I think that there are many good things within this bill, and there are things that we can continue to work on together. I am glad that there is a comprehensive approach of looking at different levers to pull. I just wanted to make one comment on what I heard today about tax credits not actually putting money into people's hands and addressing inflation. And the truth is that tax credits do. It is literally a way to offset if somebody owes the government money, or is so that they can get a dollar for dollar back. And we do know that the levers that are pulled are either give people direct checks or give them tax credits so that they can you can offset whatever they might owe, or if they don't owe anything, that they get that money back directly. And that is also money directly in people's hands. And so I just wanted to make sure that we correct that and help people understand that a tax credit is not helping people. It absolutely helps people. And I just wanted to say thank you for looking at those different pieces, and that I look forward to us continue to all work together and ensuring that the pieces that we may not agree on, that we can work on together. So I just wanted to make sure I get to clarify a little bit about tax credits. And since we can't address the issues that drive up inflation around supply chain issues that started with the 2018 Trump tax cuts that allowed businesses and incented them to actually move businesses abroad, which made supply chain issues even worse, which leads to where we are today, that since we cannot address those issues, we cannot address what we can in Minnesota here. And so thank you so much for bringing the bill forward.
Thank you, Representative Herr. Anyone else? Commissioner Doty.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. In closing, I just want to say that Governor Walz and revenue stand ready to work closely with the legislature this session to support local jobs and projects, expand economic opportunities for Minnesotans, invest in our children and families, and protect Minnesota's health, safety, and well-being. Once again, I want to thank Chair Marquardt and members of the committee for the opportunity to present the governor's supplemental budget and tax bill today. We look forward to a productive partnership and dialogue throughout this session. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Doty, for your presentation and for your work for the state. And thanks, Ms. Bears and the rest of the Revenue Department team. Thank you so much. One thing we need to do is looking at the House fiscal analysis. What is the cost of this bill? I always, if it's not brought up, we need to do that. And there is a subtotal there on line 7 of the House Fiscal Analysis Department. And so for 2223, the cost of the state is $1,071,000,000. And for 2425, the cost is $497 million. So those are, and again, you have all of those there. So thank you for all the discussion today. And I do thank Governor Walz for bringing this forward. It is really a balanced approach where you've got half of the budget surplus going right back into taxpayers' pockets and the other half investing in important areas like education, healthcare, and public safety. And that's what I'm hearing around from folks is they want a balanced approach to things. And I think this tax bill, House File 3669, goes a long way in providing that balance, which in the end is going to benefit the state of Minnesota and improve the quality of life for every Minnesotan. So with that, I would like to renew my motion to lay over House File 3669 for possible inclusion into the House Omnibus Tax Bill. Members, thank you so much. Tomorrow, we're going to hear public testimony on the governor's tax bill. And with that, we'll see you back tomorrow. And again, Commissioner Doty, thank you so much for your time today. So, members, we are adjourned.